This week's show is sponsored by Audible, a leading provider of spoken audio information and entertainment. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want with Audible.
It's time for Making Sense with Steve Laser.
Y'all ready for this?
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Making Sense with Steve Laser, the show that breaks down the top issues in the last week in politics, strips out all the nonsense, and provides you the best analysis in political media. This week, our top story is the silly lawsuit that House Speaker John Boehner says that he'll file against the president for supposed abuse of executive power. We'll also have updates on Russia and Ukraine and the important Supreme Court decision that affects whether women's clinics can keep abortion protesters at a 35-foot distance. At the end, we'll have our weekly trademark Hall of Fame and Shame for those politicians and prominent individuals who made great sense or shameful nonsense, respectively. If you want to write to me and give me your opinion of any topic I cover, write to makingsenseletters@yahoo.com, and I may just read your opinion on the air. Again, that's makingsenseletters@yahoo.com. My feature story on Speaker Boehner's ridiculous lawsuit begins now. The big topic this week is the lawsuit that Republican House Speaker John Boehner plans to file against President Obama for supposed executive overreach. Now, I was on Fox News Saturday night on the show Justice with Judge Jeanine Pirro, facing off against guest hosts Kimberly Guilfoyle and Ryan Gerdusky. Before I talk about my appearance and my opinions, let me play a part of my friend Neil Cavuto on his show Your World with Neil Cavuto, taking on Michelle Bachmann on this same topic.
Well, the lawsuit is what you might call a long-term effort if it even gets picked up by a court. A lot of courts might call this a political question. This could drag on for months, and we may not get anywhere. Again, it reflects the frustration of the
American people.
You
just said it, Congresswoman. We might not get anywhere. Now, maybe Republicans are in their right. Maybe the president's within his right. But if the issue is, you know, one side or the other abusing his authority, maybe someone should get to work under the underlying problems that some feel the other side is usurping from it. But we spend too much time arguing, oh, you shouldn't have done that. Oh, we're going to indict you on this. We're going to go back and forth. Fix whatever is wrong right now rather than dragging the other side to court. There's so much wrong here. This finger pointing, we're going to drag your ass to court. We're going to do this. Just do something. You know what I'm saying?
Let me go where you're going, and I agree with you, because
it's
this is what we need to do. This is what Congress can do, and I argue must do. Number one,
why didn't you do it years ago when you were first raising it?
Criminy, give me a second, and I will tell you.
Why? Okay, Congressman. Why now? Why after all this time? You've been talking about this for years. Now someone just woke up and said, I got an idea. Let's sue.
Now, Bachmann could not answer Neil's point because it has no answer. We got a lot of real issues to address in this country. We have, from the very beginning of this administration, because the prior administration left this country in a terrible spot, economically, foreign policy-wise, but we have a lot of real issues. Where are we going on immigration? What else should we be doing to help the economy create jobs? We face more major foreign policy challenges in the Middle East, right, and with Russia and China. I talk about this a lot on my show. These challenges are out there. And we do not get any policy proposals on these issues from Republicans. What do we get? We get manufactured outrage. We get false scandals. And instead of moving on, now we have a new one, this idea of the executive overreach. Folks, in my opinion, this upcoming lawsuit by Boehner, he hasn't announced it yet. He hasn't said what might be in it. He hasn't said what particular things he's objecting to. But this continues a pattern of obstruction, hypocrisy, and gross exaggeration that Republicans have been engaging in from day one of the Obama administration. On everything he has tried to do, the president has faced over-the-top Republican obstruction. From the very beginning, one of the first things the president tried to do was the stimulus. They created an entire AstroTurf protest movement, the Tea Party, over the president's desire to pass a stimulus to improve the economy. That's what the Republicans did in the midst of a horrific downturn in the economy, one of the worst ones, probably the worst ones, in post-World War II America. And Republicans were playing politics. Of course, we have the nonstop opposition to the health care reform effort. Without any ideas from Republicans on how to improve the health system in this country, and it proceeded that way for years after the president announced that he was pursuing health care reform, until just a few months ago when Republicans quietly unveiled a token effort. Most of you have probably never heard of it. Republicans want it that way. They don't want people to know that they put this token alternative out there just a few months ago, just to be able to say, hey, we actually did put something together, but it's not a serious plan. And to give you an idea of how crazy this effort by John Boehner is, I mean, you could hear what Neil Cavuto say. Neil Cavuto and I are on very friendly terms, as probably many of you have recognized from watching he and I together, but we don't agree on much politically. We just don't. But you could hear the frustration in his voice dealing with Congressman Michelle Bachmann. Because while he and I don't agree, one of the things that he's very serious about is that people should try to address the real issues in this country. He wants them addressed from a conservative standpoint. But this lawsuit doesn't address anything. This lawsuit doesn't help this country in any way. And just to underscore the point that this idea that the president is overreaching with executive authority is ridiculous. President Obama, I looked this up, nobody has said this, President Obama is on track to issue the fewest executive orders of any two-term president since Grover Cleveland's two disconnected terms, the last of which ended in 1897. Just about every metric by which one can compare President Obama to prior recent presidents, he has pushed the envelope less on executive authority than they have. If Republicans, this is the key here, folks, that I want everybody to come away from this segment remembering. If Republicans wanted to push back against executive overreach, every president has had a little bit. Every president has gotten a little frustrated with their ability to do at least one or two things that they wanted to get done. But if Republicans wanted to push back against executive overreach, they had a perfect opportunity with the Bush administration. And for 4 years during the Bush administration, Republicans controlled both the House and the Senate. So it was a perfect opportunity for them to say, you know what, this is our idea of what the Constitution says about the powers of the president. The current president in office is exceeding those. We're going to pass some laws to try to rein him in. They did not do that. And they didn't do it in the midst of things like warrantless wiretapping. President Bush insisted on directing the CIA and NSA to wiretap people in the United States without a warrant. Now, this is under a situation where FISA existed. So the Bush administration at any time could have gotten a secret warrant from a secret court to wiretap somebody. That wasn't good enough. They had to do completely warrantless wiretapping. No paper trail. Republicans in Congress did nothing. Bush exceeded the 2002 Iraq War Resolution's mandate. The Iraq War Resolution said that Bush had the authority to go to war to enforce UN resolutions and to protect the country against Iraq. There was no threat from Iraq. The UN weapons inspectors that were in the country for the 3 or 4 months prior to the Iraq war said that Iraq was in compliance. Iraq did not have a weapons of mass destruction program. The Bush administration exceeded his authority in that congressional Iraq war resolution, went to war anyway. Republicans said nothing. The Bush administration tortured people. Waterboarding, other kinds of enhanced interrogation techniques. Republicans in Congress said nothing. Extraordinary rendition, the practice of deporting people to countries where even worse enhanced interrogation methods were practiced, Republicans in Congress said nothing. Many more signing statements and executive orders per year than President Obama. Again, Republicans said nothing. Republicans were essentially silent during the entirety of the executive power grab by the Bush administration. David Swanson has a book about this out that I reviewed a couple of years back. It's called Daybreak. And he has an entire book that outlines all of the abuses of power by the Bush administration. And it takes a book to outline them all. Again, during that whole thing, Republicans were silent. Now, on the other side of things, I will say, folks, that I and many others, including David Swanson, on the progressive left, welcome the idea of having a discussion on limiting the powers of the executive branch. But let's not pretend that there's any altruistic motive behind this. Republicans would drop this the moment that a Republican president was elected, particularly if there was a Republican Congress. Another president could be elected, another Republican president, with a Republican Congress, and Republicans would do the same thing that they did in the Bush administration. That president would overreach, and the Republicans in Congress would say nothing. This is not about doing the right thing for executive power in terms of the Constitution. This is about another method to try to obstruct President Obama's agenda. And speaking of President Obama and his agenda, I got to say, I completely understand the frustration behind some of the things that the president has done, some of the executive orders and some of the other steps. We have a Congress, folks, that is historically notorious in terms of not addressing the challenges of the day. And what I mean by that is that even measured in terms of what is regarded as the least productive Congress in modern times, and that's the Do-Nothing Congress of 1948, even measured with respect to them, this current Congress, this current House of Representatives under John Boehner looks bad. The Do-Nothing Congress of 1948 passed 395 laws in their first year, and that was low. The current Congress has passed 58, so around one-seventh as productive as what is known as the Do-Nothing Congress of 1948. That's pathetic, folks. At some point, the business of the country has to get done. And the problems that we have to be addressed. If Congress won't do it, any president would look to the limits of their executive authority and probably look to push the limits of their executive authority to keep the country moving forward. The president said as much the other day. He said, "I'm not going to apologize for trying to do something while they're doing nothing." I want to look back again at what Neil Cavuto said to Michelle Bachmann and how outraged he was. I mean, do something, Republicans, on some issue. Just one. I'm not asking a whole lot. My friend Neil Cavuto wasn't asking a whole lot. He's basically saying, this is ridiculous. This is a waste of time. It's not going to go anywhere in any case. Do something regarding some issue. Pass laws from the conservative standpoint of something. Pass resolutions directing the president to do what you think should be done on foreign policy. Do something. Something constructive, at least apparently constructive. Once you've done that on all of the major issues of the day, then let's talk about reforming the powers of the president and the executive branch. But you know what, folks? As I said, that's not really what's going on here. That's not what Republicans are really interested in doing. They want to be as obstructionist as possible against President Obama, as they have been from day one. They want to stop him from doing anything. They want to create the perception that he's a failed president. And I got to say, he's not a failed president. If he does nothing from now until the end of his second term, he's not a failed president. He turned the economy around, and the economy, as I've said before on several shows, was really in a bad place, folks. That is a huge success to be able to turn that around on his watch. That by itself makes him a successful president, and there's nothing that Republicans can do to change that. One other point that I want to make regarding Republican hypocrisy on executive overreach. Our last Republican presidential nominee, Mitt Romney, said something very interesting regarding Obamacare. He vowed to repeal Obamacare by executive order if elected, because going through Congress would take too much time. I got to say, folks, I didn't hear any criticism from Republicans about Mitt Romney saying that. We'll be right back. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want with Audible. Listeners of Making Sense with Steve Laser can get a free audiobook and 30-day trial membership if they sign up at www.audibletrial.com/lasersense. If you want to listen to it, Audible has it. With over 150,000 titles and virtually every genre, you'll find what you're looking for. For instance, Inferno, the latest novel by Dan Brown, is available, as is The Cuckoo's Calling by Robert Galbraith. Sign up now at www.audibletrial.com/lasersense. Welcome back. The Washington Post reported on a story about the energy issues between Russia, Europe, and the Ukraine, and I thought this would be a good segue into talking about Russia and Ukraine issues. If you've been listening to the show for a while, you know that the issues between Russia and Ukraine are ones that I think are pretty important. I covered them almost every week for a while. I stopped for a couple of weeks because I thought maybe I was saturating you guys with the topic. Maybe you didn't want to hear so much, but things are starting to get really important over there. Well, they never really stopped getting important, but this situation now is really heating up regarding Russia using gas as a weapon. From the very beginning, when the crisis started, after Russia invaded the Ukraine, specifically Crimea and annexed Crimea, Russia has been using gas as a weapon as a way to try to prevent particularly the European Union from coming down on Russia too hard with sanctions. Countries like Germany are dependent upon Russian gas for over 50% of their fossil fuel requirements. If you know anything about Germany and how Germany meets their energy needs, they do a lot of things with renewable energy, with solar, wind, and similar-based energy, but they get, of the fossil fuels that they need, they get most of them from Russia. So Germany was a little bit hamstrung in responding to the crisis, and Russia has really been pressing that as much as possible to avoid any repercussions from their invasion. And more to the point, specifically with Ukraine, Ukraine owes Russia a $4.5 billion gas debt. Now, there was no problem with this debt when a pro-Russian government was in power in Ukraine, when Viktor Yanukovych, who was Moscow's selected president, when he was in power in Ukraine. But, of course, now it's being used as leverage against Ukraine and against Europe. And one of the largest energy-producing companies in Russia is state-owned. It's Gazprom. And their CEO, Alexei Miller, was quoted in the Washington Post saying some very interesting things. Now, just to give you some background, there is a major or a number of major pipelines that go from Russia to southern Europe through Ukraine. And that's one of the things that makes this so interesting. the pumping of the oil and gas goes through Ukraine that gets to Europe. So one of the things that the European countries have been trying to do is to give assistance and aid to Ukraine by setting up what's called reverse flow shipments back to Ukraine via Slovakia. And this totally thwarts what Russia is trying to do. Russia is trying to sort of get their way in Ukraine by not pumping them oil, and they said that they're not going to pump any more to Ukraine unless Ukraine pays part of their bill. Europe's trying to help Ukraine out. And what Gazprom CEO Alexei Miller said on Friday is that the company is closely monitoring the situation and may curb supplies in the foreseeable future to those nations that would pump the Russian gas to Ukraine through reverse flow, which he described as a, quote, half-fraudulent scheme. And the Post article notes that he wouldn't name any specific country. So how is this a half-fraudulent scheme? These European countries have paid for the oil and gas. What they're basically doing is reselling, or in some cases giving the oil and gas to Ukraine at a lower price that they've already paid for. So this is not a half fraudulent or any kind of fraudulent scheme. So this is what Russia has been up to. They've been trying to bully all the countries around them using military, using oil, using gas. While they've been doing that, the new president of Ukraine has been out there acting responsibly. Ireland's RTE News reports that Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko, who was elected May 25th, has extended a truce with rebels in the eastern part of his country, of Ukraine, by another 72 hours. This allows the rebels more time to meet European Union demands as to their conduct. The European Union stepped into the conflict between the Kiev government and Ukraine and the rebels in the eastern part of Ukraine, and imposed conditions on both sides in order to reach an agreement. Referring to those demands, French President Hollande told reporters, if no progress is made on these main three points, that the Council of the EU member states would take more measures. Those three points are things that the rebels in the eastern part of Ukraine need to do, putting down their arms, coming to the table, and talking with the folks from the Ukraine government. There's a couple of those. And if they don't do those things, the EU would take more measures. The president of Ukraine, who's on the other side of things from these rebels, extended a truce with them by another 72 hours to give them more time to do that. Obviously a very nice gesture, a responsible gesture. Earlier on Friday, Ukrainian President Poroshenko signed an association accord with the European Union that offered, as he put it, his ex-Soviet country a fresh start after years of political instability. If you recall, it is this exact kind of an agreement that started the problems with unrest in Ukraine back in November. Ukraine's former pro-Moscow president Viktor Yanukovych had refused to sign such an agreement with the EU in favor of closer ties with Moscow. Obviously, Putin and the government in Russia was behind that. They don't want Ukraine to have a closer relationship with the EU. Well, that's what there is now. That agreement was signed last week. Mr. Poroshenko said the pact offered, quote, an absolutely new perspective for my country. It's a historic day, the most important day since independence. And Russia issued a statement saying that grave consequences would follow. Now, what country, what former Soviet bloc country wouldn't want to do this? The countries that were former Soviet bloc countries that have established closer relationships with the EU, Poland, Czech Republic, all of those countries, they're doing really well economically. And the countries that haven't yet, they're not doing so well. I mean, to the point, Georgia and Moldova also signed similar deals. And that gives these three countries, Georgia, Moldova, and Ukraine, the prospect, as the Post put it, of deep economic integration and unfettered access to the EU's 500 million citizens, many of whom have plenty of money to spend on products from these countries. So Again, what country wouldn't want to do that? And in addition to the idea of grave consequences, Russian President Putin said that Ukrainian society is split after being forced to choose between Europe and Russia. He said the anti-constitutional coup in Kyiv, the attempts to impose an artificial choice between Europe and Russia, have pushed society to a split, to a painful internal confrontation, Putin said. No, Vladimir Vladimirovich, you did that. Russia did that. Russia has been trying to force Ukraine to have a closer relationship with Russia only and not the EU since November. That's Russia's fault. And the people of Ukraine have been pretty consistent in saying what they wanted. Well, actually, it's changed slightly now that you've invaded and taken a piece of their country. Now they don't want to have much to do with Russia anymore. Gee, big surprise, right, Vladimir? You couldn't have seen that one coming? No, back in November, the people of Ukraine wanted a relationship with both the EU and Russia. But you refused to allow them to have that. You told your guy in the Ukraine not to sign that agreement with the EU back in November. That's why we're all here where we are. And as far as this idea, he's still talking about this anti-constitutional coup in Kyiv. That didn't make much sense when he started saying that back in late February, early March, when the coup happened. And it makes no sense now. We have a fully democratic elected president now in Mr. Poroshenko. He was elected May 25th. That May 25th election was planned right away when the coup happened. And all you would hear from Moscow and from Putin is how this right-wing government has taken over in Ukraine. It's anti-democratic. It's a coup. They're neo-Nazis. They hate Jews. While all along it was a caretaker government that wasn't going to do much until they could have full elections on May 25th. It's been a series of lie after lie from Russia and Putin about Ukraine from the very beginning. So here we have on one side the Russians using gas to try to blackmail Europe and Ukraine into letting them have their way, threats, lies, all these things coming from Russia and Putin. And you have Ukraine and their new democratically elected president extending a ceasefire with its rebels, forging new relationships with Europe. I mean, what more do I need to say, folks? I think that speaks volumes in terms of who's behaving constructively and destructively in Eastern Europe. People ask me why I'm so down on Russia when I had really, if you'd spoken to me 2 years ago, I had such a positive opinion of Russia. I was so optimistic at the possibility of Russia and the United States having a closer relationship and between the two making sure that the earth became much more peaceful and much, you know, was bringing prosperity to the people of the world, and Putin really just totally blew that over the last 6 months. It's a real shame. That's why I'm so down on Russia. And you can see their behavior even now and the types of things that they're doing. We'll be right back.
Do you know our sense of smell is the most important after our sense of sight? It's the most powerful as well, and it triggers memories and emotions and is the most compelling aspect to make you feel wonderful. At scentaprises.com, that's scenterprises.com, we take you on a fragrance journey to learn about the magic and mystery of scent to create your very own custom perfume. We have an exquisite range of perfume blends which spans the entire fragrance palette, from sparkling citrus notes to light, fresh and clean herbals and marine notes, florals that everyone will love, such as fresh, gentle, sexy and heady florientals. And if you prefer sophisticated fragrances, our blends of spicy, amber, woodsy, musky, mossy, and luscious gourmand vanilla notes are warm, sensual, and combine beautifully with all the blends. So why wear what everyone else wears when you can create your very own custom perfume? Be different. Contact Sue at scentaprises.com. Scentaprises, our business makes you sensational.
Welcome back. On Friday, the Supreme Court struck down a Massachusetts law that provides for a 35-foot buffer zone around women's clinics beyond which anti-abortion protesters are not allowed to approach. The law was passed to prevent harassment of women trying to have services performed at these clinics. I actually have personal history with this, folks. When my first wife and I got married, we didn't have a whole lot of money and we didn't have health insurance, so we depended on Planned Parenthood to provide us low-cost birth control pills and other family planning services. So we'd go there fairly often, and every time we went, protesters would approach us and beg us not to, quote, kill our baby. Now, my wife was never pregnant during any of those trips, so it wasn't only harassment that I experienced, we experienced. It was harassment that didn't make any sense. So I'm completely on board with the idea that women who are seeking to get any kinds of family planning services should not have to deal with harassment to get it. But the Supreme Court struck down that Massachusetts law unanimously 9-0. And a lot of my liberal and progressive friends were extremely upset about the decision and were particularly upset at and bewildered about female justices, female liberal justices, no less, Kagan, Sotomayor, and Ginsburg, siding with the majority. And I was pretty upset also, at least until I read the ruling. And I'm still not happy about it, even after reading it, but I understand the reasoning of the justices. The ruling centered around a number of issues, and I'm going to try to describe two of them, because I think they're the two most important as far as that decision goes. And one of them is the idea that the Massachusetts law was not content neutral. The Massachusetts law specified only clinics that offer abortion services that people, protesters, had to maintain at least a 35-foot distance. And what the Supreme Court said was that if you craft a law that is not content-specific, it seemed to them that the law was specifically created to attack a particular kind of protest and speech. And that's the problem with it. The Supreme Court itself has a buffer zone around it. But that buffer zone prevents people from all ideologies with all issues from maintaining that distance. It doesn't focus on any one particular group and point of view. The other issue that they noted was kind of similar to this, but they said it was specific to a type of medical facility. And that also fed into the whole idea that the law was aimed at a particular group. If they had not specified women's clinics or abortion providers, and this is the good news here, folks, if they had specified any type of medical facility, then they would have been fine. So the good news is that it seems like another law can be created that says that all medical facilities have a 35-foot buffer zone through which protesters cannot approach. Closest that you can approach if you're protesting a medical facility for any reason in the state of Massachusetts is 35 feet. I believe that if they do that, if it's not limited to women's clinics and those facilities that perform abortions, that it will not be struck down. So it's really simple. The Massachusetts state legislature should get working on another law right away. I understand why the justices ruled this way, not happy that for the time being women are not going to have this 35-foot buffer, but I understand it from a perspective of free speech. Everybody has to have the opportunity to have the same type of free speech and the ability to protest and things like that. I can appreciate that as a liberal, and I hope all of you out there who are liberals and progressives can appreciate that too. This can be fixed, folks. That's the good news here. The Massachusetts state legislature just has to get on the horn, pass a law, make sure, you know, have your lawyers, your constitutional lawyers review it, and then we can fix this. We'll be right back. We don't get fooled again. What's the biggest fallacy about diamonds? More facets are better and will create more fire. Doesn't that make sense? Nothing could be farther from the truth. In fact, larger facets create more fire. The new Blaze Cut is a unique square diamond with a fabulous display of colors never before seen emanating from a diamond. In fact, the Blaze Diamond has 9 times the fire of any other round diamond of the same size.
It took a genius to invent the glazed diamond, and an amazing artist to highlight the beauty in fine jewelry. View Blazed Diamond Jewelry by Bez Ambar on Badler.com, BADLER.com, or search Blazed Diamond on YouTube to see remarkable videos. Experience this new innovation by coming to Maurice Badler Fine Jewelry in New York City, 485 Park Avenue between 58th and 59th Streets. Visit Badler.com for more information or call 800-M-BADLER. That's 800-M-B-A-D-L-E-R.
And now it's time for our weekly Hall of Fame and Shame for those politicians and prominent individuals who made great sense or shameful nonsense, respectively. First, our Hall of Fame for making sense. Winning the Hall of Fame this week for making great sense is Nation editor Katrina VandenHeuvel. ABC News had a panel discussion Sunday, June 29th, about the lawsuit by John Boehner regarding supposed executive overreach by President Obama. And the discussion turned to whether we should go to war again in Iraq, and whether the president, if he decides to do that, should get congressional approval. Nation editor Katrina VandenHeuvel was on with the Weekly Standard editor Bill Kristol, who has advocated that the United States take more military action in Iraq in response to gains made by the militant Islamic group ISIS. Let's listen to Ms. VandenHeuvel's response to Mr. Kristol.
For example, the president should go to Congress if he's going to take military action in Iraq. And that was a part of your interview. And I think we're sitting here at a moment, George, where we're talking about John Boehner. But the central question of war and peace for this country, there is no military solution to Iraq. And I have to say, sitting next to Bill Kristol, man, I mean, the architects of a catastrophe that have cost this country trillions of dollars, thousands of lives, there should be accountability. We should not, if there are no regrets for the failed assumptions that have so grievously wounded this nation, I don't know what happened to our politics and media accountability, but we need it, Bill, because this country should not go back to war. We don't need armchair warriors. And if you feel so strongly, you should, with all due respect, enlist in the Iraqi army.
Now, Kristol responded saying that's a very cute line, but it's not a cute line. For those folks who are familiar with the Second World War and some of the things that happened right before it, many Americans have decided to do exactly those kinds of things. For instance, many Americans volunteered to fight with Great Britain against the Germans before the U.S. was involved in World War II. They believed in it so much, they went overseas and volunteered to fight. Many Americans also volunteered to help the Chinese fight against the Japanese at the same time. The Flying Tigers in China were a volunteer group of American aviators who fought the Chinese before the United States was involved in that war. They continued, of course, after Pearl Harbor, but they believed in the fight against that the Chinese were waging against Japan. So historically, what Katrina said was not unusual at all. And I think it's a real option. If one thinks that it's so important to fight ISIS, they should do that. They should fly to Iraq and join the Iraqi army, by all means. But don't try to force the entire United States military to fight that battle. Don't try to force kids who have volunteered to defend this country against real threats. Don't force them to fight that war. Don't force the rest of us to pay for it. So congratulations to Nation editor Katrina VandenHeuvel for winning our Hall of Fame this week for making great sense. But now we have our Hall of Shame this week for those politicians and prominent individuals who made shameful nonsense.
All aboard!
In third place this week in our Hall of Shame, we have Justin Ross Harris. I don't know if you all have heard about this, but Justin Ross Harris, he's the guy who's accused of murdering his son, Cooper, by allegedly leaving the child in a hot SUV in the summer sun for 7 hours while he went to work at Home Depot. Now, at first, police thought they might be dealing with a tragic mistake, then some of the things that came up in their investigation began to make them think otherwise. The first thing that caused a bit of cognitive dissonance for the police was they thought that it was odd that Mr. Harris allegedly told them that during his lunch break, midway through his shift, he went to his car to drop something off and didn't notice his son in the back of the car. That's hard to believe. I think every time I went to my car, I have a daughter, and I think when she was a baby and a toddler, every single time I went to my car, I took a peek at the car seat in the back, even though I knew she wasn't in it. It's just one of those things, you know, you have a car seat in the back. Makes you want to look at. The second thing is that Mr. Harris allegedly admitted researching on the web how hot it would need to be in a car to kill an animal or a child. Mr. Harris allegedly told the police he looked that up because he was afraid it could happen. Now, if you were afraid that is something that could happen to your child, wouldn't you double, triple, quadruple check every time you left the car that your kid wasn't in the car seat? It's not that hard. So these details are what caused the police to arrest Mr. Harris and charge him with murder and child endangerment. And as I said, as a father myself who lived with my child in a very hot climate for a while in Florida, I really find this impossible to understand. First of all, your child is the first thing that you think about all the time. You're always thinking about the child because there's so much to do for the child. I mean, particularly when you're traveling in a car with them, you need all of their supplies, their food, their diapers, their toys, their car seat. So you're thinking about making sure that you have everything that they need. Then you get them in the car, you strap them into the car seat, which isn't an easy thing for anybody who's done that. You know what I'm talking about. They are rarely silent in the car when you're driving them, particularly on short trips. Yeah, if you take them on a trip of more than 15, 20, 30 minutes, most of the time they'll fall asleep, right? But on shorter trips, and I understand this is a shorter trip, they usually are saying something back there, crying, laughing, squealing. They make noise. The father was supposed to drop the child off at daycare before going to work. So that's another thing that gives me a hard time understanding it. Those of you who are parents, once again, you know what I'm talking about. You have to get all the stuff that I talked about earlier in the car. You got to strap the kid in the car seat. Get the car seat in the car. You're driving. You know you have to drop off the kid at daycare. That's on your mind. And then, of course, when you drop them off at daycare, that's not a simple exercise. You still have to bring some of that stuff that you brought with them in the car. You have to bring it to the daycare. So he forgets all of that. We're supposed to believe that the father forgets all of that, goes to work, doesn't look in the back seat, never notices that his child is back there, goes to work for half of his shift, takes lunch, goes out to the car to drop something off, again doesn't notice the child in there. Child was probably dead by that time anyway, unfortunately. But doesn't notice the child back there, goes back to work, comes back, and my understanding is he doesn't even notice when he goes to drive home. At some point later, he realizes there might be a problem, looks in the car, and I'm sorry, folks. You know, I don't understand how that happens. I don't understand how you forget your child in the car. I tend to think that this wasn't an accident. And I have to point out that if it's not an accident, it's a particularly cruel way to kill someone. Allowing someone, particularly someone like a child or an elderly or disabled person, to essentially fry to death slowly in a car is a torturous death. Horrible thing to do to somebody. If he's found guilty, I hope they throw the book at Mr. Harris. Justin Ross Harris is third this week in our Hall of Shame for Worst Nonsense of the Week. In second place for even worse nonsense this week, we have Republican candidate for Congress in Oklahoma's 3rd Congressional District, Timothy Ray Murray. There's nothing that I think turns us Americans off more at the end of an election then someone who loses that election and then can't move on and deal with it with any kind of grace. Now, even when there's been, in the past, legitimate reasons to question the result of an election, Americans just don't have a lot of patience for the initial apparent loser's attempts to get the situation resolved. I tend to think of Al Gore here. Al Gore had plenty of reasons to doubt the actual count in Florida, but Republicans were able to use the natural tendencies of people not to have a favorable opinion of folks who challenge elections to produce a lot of vitriol against Gore during the recount. Now, in Florida, it's understandable that someone would question that result. So if it's bad when there are legitimate reasons to question the result of an election, imagine when there are no such reasons present. And that's what we got here. So enter Timothy Ray Murray, a Republican who challenged incumbent Republican Representative Frank Lucas for the Republican nomination to represent Oklahoma's 3rd Congressional District. Mr. Murray failed in his bid to win that nomination. He lost to the incumbent, Mr. Lucas, by the score of 83% to 5%. There was a third candidate who got 12%. But this guy loses to the incumbent 83% to 5%. Mr. Murray was not daunted, however. He said he will file an appeal, and the grounds will be that his opponent, Congressman Frank Lucas, is not human. Mr. Murray alleges that Mr. Lucas was executed when he made a trip to Ukraine on or about January 11, 2011, and was replaced by a robot or other artificial look-alike and therefore is ineligible to serve. And he claims the U.S. Department of Defense is in on the deception. On Mr. Murray's website, the following statement has been posted. I, Timothy Ray Murray, am a human, born in Oklahoma, and obtained and continue to fully meet the requirements to serve as a U.S. representative when honored to do so. I will never use a look-alike to replace my message to you or anyone else's, as both the other Republican challengers have. Representative Frank Lucas and a few other Oklahoma and other states' congressional members were depicted as being executed by the World Court on or about January 11, 2011 in southern Ukraine. On television, they were depicted as being executed by the hanging about the neck until death on a white stage and in front of witnesses. Other now current members of Congress have shared those facts on television also. We know that it is possible to use look-alike artificial or man-made replacements. However, Representative Lucas was not eligible to serve as a congressional member after that time.
The full spectrum of the bizarre.
Wow. Well, needless to say, one of the most surprised people about all of this is Congressman Frank Lucas, who is insisting that he is very much alive and the real Frank Lucas. I predict a padded room is in Mr. Murray's future. Timothy Ray Murray, defeated candidate for the Republican nomination for Congress in Oklahoma's 3rd District and robot conspiracy theorist, is runner-up this week in our Hall of Shame for infamous nonsense. But the award for worst and most shameful nonsense of the week goes to Kansas Republican Congressman Tim Huelskamp. As reported in Daily KOs, Congressman Tim Huelskamp, who represents Kansas's 1st Congressional District, attended the March for Marriage last weekend. If you're not familiar with them, March for Marriage is a group of folks who are stridently anti-gay rights. They couch this by saying that they are pro-traditional marriage. Of course, we all know what that means. They're bigoted against gays. Now, this is no departure for Congressman Huelskamp, as Wikipedia notes that after the United States Supreme Court declared the Defense of Marriage Act, or DOMA, substantially unconstitutional on June 26, 2013, Congressman Huelskamp immediately announced that he would introduce a constitutional amendment to restore the Defense of Marriage Act. He then went on the Steve Deese Show, which was a conservative radio program, to denounce the Supreme Court justices, saying, quote, "The idea that Jesus Christ himself was degrading and demeaning is what they've come down to. I can't even stand to read the decisions because I don't even think they pass law school with decisions like that." So that's just to give you all some background where this guy, Congressman Yule's camp, is coming from. So last weekend, as I mentioned, he attended the bigoted March for Marriage and said to the crowd that he, quote, urged every man in America to stand up and wed your woman. He said, women are desperately looking for a husband. They're desperately looking for a father. Be a real man of God, because this is about you. Marriage is about you and your wife and your children. I should also note that Yule's camp did do what he said on that radio show and has introduced a constitutional amendment in the House that would define marriage as between one man and one woman. I gotta ask, does it matter at all to Mr. Yule's camp what women actually want? Because it doesn't seem so. What if some or many of the hypothetical women in relationships with those men don't want to get married? There are quite a few of them out there. Does that thought ever enter Congressman Huell's camp's head? Apparently not. Women, I guess, don't have a say in this at all. They're just desperate for a knight in shining armor to marry them and save them from their awful condition of singlehood. You know, it takes someone with a lot of political dexterity, or I guess lack of dexterity, to insult two different groups at the same time. Well, Congressman Huell's camp has an opponent this November, Democratic candidate Jim Shero, who responded to Mr. Huell's camp on Facebook saying, quote, while I applaud my opponent's efforts to encourage men to take responsibility, Mr. Huell's camp's words show just how out of touch he is with constituents. I know that my daughters are valuable members of society, whether they choose to marry and have children or not. It is never a legislator's role to tell women what they are, quote, desperate for, or how naively, or to naively believe that his experience as a man and an elected official give him that right. Regardless of how Mr. Huell's camp may judge their choices, women deserve every opportunity to choose their own destiny. That's what Democratic candidate Jim Shero said on his website. And there, my friends, I've got to say, is the difference between Democrats and Republicans on social issues in a nutshell. Republicans are for continued bigotry against the LGBT community and have a war on women that features being against full agency for women, being against women deciding what they really want for their lives. And Democrats want equality for the LGBT community and a recognition of full equal agency and equal pay for women. Kansas Republican Congressman Tim Huell's camp wins the award for worst and most shameful nonsense of the week. That's all I have for today's show. Thank you for listening. The next episode of Making Sense with Steve Laser will air live at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, the Saturday and Sunday after July 4th weekend. It'll actually be a rerun, just to let you all know. That's Sunday, July 6th and Monday, July 7th at 2 p.m. Pacific Time on KCAA Radio, 1050 a.m. in Inland Empire, California. But be sure to follow me and the show on Twitter at Stephen Laser, on Facebook at Making Sense with Steve Laser, and on my blog at stevelaser.blogspot.com. Until next time, have a great rest of your day and a great week.